Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Trump's dispute with Canada escalates. India's surveillance state. And the U.S. further distances itself from NATO and Europe. First, Trump's dispute with Canada escalates. Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney's powerful speech at the World Economic Forum in Davos, which drew a standing ovation, overshadowed Trump's rambling presentation, perhaps prompting the president's angry turn to retribution. Carney made waves by portraying Canada as a middle power that prefers, quote, partnership over domination. The speech was an appeal to other countries that are looking for a third way, a pragmatic foreign policy not tethered to one or the other major power. Trump retorted that, quote, Canada lives because of the United States, a ridiculous statement that Carney pushed back on by proclaiming, Canada doesn't live because of the U.S., Canada thrives because we are Canadians. Trump is determined to make Canada pay, literally, for its independence. He threatened 100% tariffs on Canadian goods entering the U.S. if Canada should conclude a trade agreement with China. But Canada's recently concluded deal with China is merely a quid pro quo. Chinese EVs entered Canada's market in exchange for Canadian agricultural products entering China's. Moreover, Canada previewed that arrangement with the U.S. trade representative, after which Trump said, good for him. But now Carney is, to Trump, Governor Carney, another enemy on Trump's lengthening list. Another Trump administration move guaranteed to worsen relations with Canada is a crude effort to encourage separation of Alberta province. The Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, said Alberta is a natural partner of the U.S., a crude effort to appeal to a small separatist movement there that is seeking to get on the ballot. By most accounts, Alberta citizens want neither separation from Canada nor absorption by the United States. India's surveillance state. India has invaded private life in a way no democracy has attempted before. The Washington Post reports that, quote, over the past decade, the Indian state has quietly assembled a parallel digital security architecture that allows authorities to intercept, analyze, and store communications data at an enormous scale. The official justification is that the system prevents fraud. A recent study by the United Kingdom-based research firm Comparatech puts India near the bottom of its rankings of how a state protects the privacy of its citizens, with only China and Russia faring worse, unquote. The latest government move in India sought to require phone manufacturers such as Apple and Samsung to pre-install an app that links with SIM cards, allowing the government to access call logs, messages, photos, and network information. That demand was rescinded after an intense public reaction. But India's government still has Aadhaar, a near-universal biometric identification system that links fingerprints and iris scans to banking, welfare benefits, tax filings, mobile numbers, and private platforms. In effect, the Washington Post reports, Aadhaar has become a master key to everyday life, enabling the state to map identity, behavior, and access across sectors. The government also uses the Israeli-designed Pegasus system, which embeds a spying device in phones. Governments worldwide have used that system to spy on journalists and opposition politicians. Under Joe Biden, Pegasus was rejected in the United States, but it thrives in India. The U.S. further distances itself from NATO and Europe. Donald Trump's militant stance on Greenland is just one sign of his administration's disaffection with NATO. His agreement on a framework for resolving the Greenland crisis calls for a sovereign U.S. military presence on the island and as-yet unspecified mineral rights. Though the deal will not alter Greenland's status with Denmark, it is doubtful that Trump has let go of his desire to buy the island. Nor is it clear that U.S. forces will cooperate with other NATO units on Arctic defense. At the Davos meetings, Trump belittled NATO for failing to support the United States as much as the U.S. has supported NATO. He cited Afghanistan, suggesting that British and other NATO troops avoided the front lines. In fact, Britain, Italy, and other NATO forces lost hundreds of soldiers in the only war in which NATO invoked its collective security commitment. British politicians of every stripe denounced Trump's remark, forcing him to reverse gears and praise the British contribution in glowing terms. Trump also got into an argument with Britain over its decision to cede the Chagos Islands in the Indian Ocean, site of a U.S. military base, to Mauritius. Trump said the decision was, quote, an act of great stupidity. British Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer caved in to Trump's criticism and reversed his decision. One last example. The Pentagon has announced that the U.S. will be withdrawing about 200 military personnel from nearly 30 NATO advisory groups. These groups are concerned with energy security, naval warfare, and intelligence, among other functions. Last year, the Pentagon announced it would withdraw a brigade of troops from Romania and cut security aid programs to the three Baltic nations that border Russia. Under laws passed by Congress last year, the Pentagon must consult with it if U.S. forces in Europe go below 76,000. They're now around 80,000. All these events have put Trump in the crosshairs of Europeans. Other than pro-Trump Hungary and Serbia, NATO and European Union member countries have all determined that they can't rely on the U.S. and must pursue European interests independently. One early example, a major trade deal with India, January 25th, that will slash tariffs on most goods, reducing reliance on the United States. This mother of all deals, said India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi, is expected to double EU exports to India by 2032, leading to savings of 4 billion euros, that's around $4.75 billion, in duties for European companies, according to the EU. At least one U.S. official is peeved. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said, quote, the U.S. has made much bigger sacrifices than Europeans have. We have put 25% tariffs on India for buying Russian oil. Guess what happened last week? The Europeans signed a trade deal with India. Exactly. Wielding tariffs the way Trump has costs. And those costs will go much higher if the EU decides not to complete a trade deal with the United States. In other news, U.S.-based multinational corporations get a tax break. As though their profits aren't large enough, the Trump administration has orchestrated a deal to enable U.S.-based multinationals to continue moving earnings into low-tax countries, thus enhancing their bottom line. Finding these tax havens has always been one of the many options uniquely available to multinational corporations, and now American companies have an advantage others do not. The administration strong-armed the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development to weaken a 2021 regulation, which the Biden administration initiated, that requires all multinationals to pay a 15% global minimum tax on transactions involving tax havens such as the Bahamas. Trump had threatened to impose a retaliatory tax on foreign investors. The Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent hailed the new agreement as, quote, a historic victory in preserving U.S. sovereignty and protecting American workers and businesses from extraterritorial overreach. How the Trump administration punishes pro-Palestinian opinion. Chris Hedges writes about the Trump administration's persecution of Francesca Albanese, the United Nations Human Rights Rapporteur on Gaza. It's a sordid tale of constant efforts to silence and sideline her as she investigates and reports on Israel's genocide. Says Hedges, quote, she was placed on the Office of Foreign Assets Control List, that's OFAC, of the U.S. Treasury Department, normally used to sanction those accused of money laundering or being involved with terrorist organizations, 6 days after the release of her report, From Economy of Occupation to Economy of Genocide. That report cited 48 corporations and institutions, such as Lockheed Martin, Microsoft, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, IBM, and Caterpillar, that had profited from the Israeli repression. It also includes a database of around 1,000 corporations that collaborate with Israel and demands that these firms and institutions sever ties with Israel or be held accountable for complicity in war crimes. Hedges notes that by being on Trump's OFAC list, not only is Albanese denied rights normally granted to UN officials, financial institutions are prohibited from having her as a client. And this companion story, how Israel's Netanyahu seeks to punish a liberal newspaper. Sometimes Benjamin Netanyahu outdoes Donald Trump in efforts to silence critics. Israel's leading liberal newspaper, Haaretz, reports that the Netanyahu government has ordered that all ministries cease contact with Haaretz. In an affidavit filed with the High Court of Justice, the government says the newspaper, quote, has expressed support for the enemy in time of war, and therefore the state was under no legal or public obligation to support it financially. The affidavit also said Haaretz is, quote, used by many of those who hate Israel and anti-Semites on a daily basis. In fact, the only thing Haaretz is guilty of is criticizing Netanyahu's politics and policies. Coal is rebounding under Trump. As the U.S. retreats from regulations to combat climate change, it also is giving new life to the coal industry. In 2025, the Rhodium Group reports, 13% more coal was burned than in 2024 for electricity, helping account for a 2.4% increase in U.S. greenhouse gas emissions. A major reason for the increased electricity use is the construction of more and more data centers using AI. The economics of burning more coal at existing power plants has led some utilities to postpone planned retirements of coal plants and others to stay open beyond their planned closure. In the latter case, that was due to an order from the Energy Department. The goal is to stop the political closure of coal plants, said Chris Wright, the energy director, a goal in keeping with Trump's beautiful clean coal assessment. There's a major problem here, however. The costs of keeping these old coal plants open can be staggering. These are old plants, and they are expensive to refurbish and keep open, said Ari Pesko, director of Harvard Law School's Electricity Law Initiative. The costs, he said, are going to fall on somebody. The question is whether it's the plant owners or the public. The death toll from the Iran protests is uncertain. Early reports from Iran estimated an exceptionally high number of deaths as Iran's security forces fired into crowds in a desperate effort to halt protests in some 400 cities and towns. These estimates ranged from 12,000 to 20 or even 30,000. Iran's government eventually said around 3,400 people were killed, including 2,400 civilians and security forces. But the U.S.-based Human Rights Activists News Agency puts the death toll at 5,137, based on activists inside Iran verifying fatalities against public records and witness statements. Among them were 4,834 demonstrators and 54 children. China purges a top military official. General Zhang Youxia, long considered a confidant of Xi Jinping and a vice chairman of the powerful Central Military Commission, which is equivalent to our National Security Council, has been placed under investigation. Considering the closeness of the two men, this is an extraordinary development that leaves the seven-member Central Military Commission with only two members, Xi plus one other. The other five commission members have all been cashiered. Zhang was the only CMC general with combat experience. China announced that another general, Liu Zhenli, not a commission member, was also placed under investigation. As usual, details of the purge have not been published, only that General Zhang was removed for, quote, grave violations of discipline and the law. Ordinarily, that charge might signify corruption, but in this case, many observers believe Zhang had challenged certain Xi policies, or that Zhang might have been a factor in the eventual succession to Xi. These purges, the latest in a long list of Xi purges of the military's top ranks, indicates serious problems in China's military. A new study details the extraordinary costs of the Ukraine war, especially for Russia. U.S.-Russia-Ukraine trilateral talks are taking place in Abu Dhabi. Some reports suggest the parties are very close to an agreement, but Russia's public position suggests otherwise. A Kremlin aide said that, quote, without resolving the territorial issue, there is no hope of achieving a long-term settlement, unquote. Resolving the territorial issue means that Ukraine must give up land to Russia. In this four-year-old war, a study by the Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies finds that total Russian and Ukrainian casualties is nearing 2 million. Since February 2022, says the study, Russian forces have suffered nearly 1.2 million casualties, more losses than any major power in any war since World War II. The study reaches two other important conclusions. First, that Russia is paying an extraordinary price for minimal territorial gains. And second, that Russia is becoming a second or third-rate economic power, Its manufacturing is declining, consumer demand is weakening, inflation remains stubbornly high, and the country faces a labor crunch. Economic growth has slowed to 0.6% in 2025. That's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.